Okay, I'm ready.
Great, thank you. Good morning. This is the April 25, 2023 Thurston County Land Use Hearing Calendar. My name is Sharon Rice. I'm an attorney who works as a hearing examiner on contract for 10 cities and counties in Western Washington. I have been appointed by Thurston County to provide hearing examiner services, and that appointment gives me jurisdiction to hear and decide the items on today's agenda. Here at the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to consider the Burdette reasonable use exception. This is project number 2021-103-102. There is another matter scheduled to be heard after this matter, and I will check in with the parties and probably re-deliver my opening remarks at that point. But for the purposes of this hearing, please understand the following information. First, anyone who needs to get my attention today, you can call me Ms. Rice or Examiner Rice. If you have requests on how we should address you, please let us know during your testimony. Today's hearing is, of course, being conducted virtually on the Zoom platform, and Zoom is making a recording. The audio recording of this hearing is legally required, and it needs to be perfectly audible. And because in a virtual context, people who speak at the same time cancel each other out, it is my standard practice to ask folks when you are not testifying to mute your audio. That prevents any inadvertent noise from your background, from overstepping someone else's testimony. Of course, we'll remind you to unmute when it is time to hear from you. Also, if you can check and make sure your phones or other noise-making items in your environment are silent, that'll make sure we can hear everything you have to say. Of course, despite the virtual format and sort of casual demeanor of your examiner, this is a legal proceeding. Please do keep that in mind. Just like at an in-person hearing, if we have any disruptive behavior, I will be asking for the hearing clerk's assistance in muting a person who is causing disruptions. And if we have any really untoward behavior, people can be ejected from the meeting. So everybody just keep that in mind. In Washington State, land use hearing examiners are required to abide by the appearance of fairness doctrine. This is a state law that requires decision makers to be impartial and unbiased. Because this law applies to my role, I want to make the following disclosures. Again, I work on contract for Thurston County. I am not a county employee. In addition, I don't own any property or have family or friends with interests in property anywhere too close to or even near the subject property. No personal interests, no financial interests. And finally, I have not had conversations with anybody regarding the merits of this proposal, not staff, not applicant, not public. Because those facts are all true, I am capable of issuing an impartial decision consistent with the state law. Anyone who believes they have grounds to challenge my impartiality is required to raise that challenge at their first opportunity, and that would be today and during your testimony if you feel you have grounds. Always need to state that for the record. I also want to note the following. Some folks might not know. Land use permits are open to public comments, and we have a full hearing in which anyone who is interested is able to testify, but permits are not decided by vote or by consensus or by popularity contest. So what I mean to say is the number of people for or against a project, that number of people is not itself evidence. As the county's examiner, I am charged with reviewing all information that is submitted in the record and determining whether, on balance, that evidence does demonstrate compliance with the criteria for approval or fails to demonstrate compliance with those criteria. And then the number of people for or against a project is not itself evidence. It's kind of a tricky thing to communicate, but I'm always just trying to make sure people know there is a burden of proof in a land use application. It belongs to the applicant, and that legal burden means it's the applicant's responsibility to provide evidence that does demonstrate compliance with the criteria for permit approval. Despite that burden of proof belonging to the applicant, in Thurston County, as in most counties and cities in Washington State, we will hear from county staff first in this hearing. That's because county staff tend to be the experts in both the code that applies and also the hearing process. So as we go for testimony, I will hear a presentation first from county staff. I have questions for them. Then I will hear the applicant's presentation, I do have questions queued up for the applicant. During their presentation, the applicant can add to or challenge anything county staff has said in their testimony and ask any clarifying questions they have about county's staff report or recommended conditions. After that, I will go for public comment. With the hearing clerk's help, we will acknowledge each person who may want to provide testimony. You'll be promoted from attendee to panelist. You'll be there then able to share your video as well as speak audibly for our attention. We will take public comment from each person who wishes to testify all together one at a time. And then after all the public who wishes to testify has done so, we'll close public comment. They'll be returned to attendees. And then we will have responses, first from staff and last from the applicant, because as the party with the burden of proof, they get the last say in these proceedings. At that point, we will be done with testimony and I will close the record, but please understand, in the virtual hearing context, because people have been invited to participate virtually and because technology can thwart in everybody's best intentions, it is my practice to hold the record open briefly to allow for post-hearing written public comment from members of the public who attempted to participate but were unable to do so due to technology reasons. So that means when we are done today, the record will still be open briefly. In my case, that's two business days for post-hearing comment from people who may have had technology problems that prevented them from participating. If we get none, the record would close then and the decision deadline would run from the second date. If we do receive post-hearing written public comment from people who had technology problems, then staff and the applicants will also have 2 days to respond in writing. And their comments and responses will be included in the record. This creates a bit of a graduated decision issuance deadline. So at the end of the hearing, I will go over those dates specifically, and we will figure out whether there's any other documents the record is held open for, and I will announce the decision deadlines on the record today. At the end of the hearing, I will email the post-hearing schedule to the clerk and ask that she forward it to the applicant and post it online so that everybody knows. All right, that was fast, but it's not that interesting, so I was trying to move through it a clip. At this point, I do want to go ahead and call our hearing to order. Again, this is a project proposed by Kim Burdett. The project, the subject property is at 8815 Libby Road Northeast in unincorporated Olympia, Washington. And before today's hearing, I was provided with the packet so that I could be familiar with the proposal and conduct an efficient hearing. I want to acknowledge those exhibits for the record so everyone knows what I have seen. At Exhibit 1, we have the staff report prepared by Community Planning and Economic.
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Is she frozen?
Yeah.
Maybe she'll hang up and call back.
Yeah, my name is Sharon Lumban Tobing. I'm a senior planner with Thurston County.
Thanks, and I'm gonna ask you to spell your name for the record, please.
Lumbantobing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So if you would raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you very much and go ahead.
Thank you, Examiner Rice. As you mentioned, this is project number 2021-103-102, the Burdett Reasonable Use Exception. The applicant's requesting approval of an RUE to construct a 4,900 square foot single family residence and garage, 2,900 square foot driveway, 3,000 square foot septic and drain field, and 1,000 square foot yard, 200 square foot sidewalk on a 7.3 acre parcel, which is encumbered by two category three seasonal wetlands and their two 240 foot buffers. The applicant's requesting reduction of the two 240 foot buffers for wetlands A and B down to 100 foot 105 foot buffer to accommodate the residence and driveway, and a further reduction of wetland A's buffer to 81 feet for the proposed septic drain field. The applicant also proposes to regrade an existing unmaintained access road that runs along the north property line. A 25% buffer reduction is allowed by county code. That would lead to an 180-foot buffer with a 15-foot construction setback. The applicant is requesting a buffer reduction beyond what is allowed in code due to the property configuration and critical area encumbrance. Therefore, it requires a RU. A wetland delineation report and buffer mitigation plan was proposed, which shows a 1-to-1 mitigation ratio. The critical area ordinance sets out the process and criteria for any property owner to apply for an RUE. 8 criteria must be met. If the hearing examiner finds that the 8 criteria met, staff have provided conditions of approval, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, great. I do have questions. Ms. Lubin-Tobin, could you clarify your understanding of what the proposed footprint of the residential
development? Yes, I didn't get that until very late, the day that the staff report was due, but it does appear that the home is 3,000 square foot. That leaves 1,900 square foot for a garage and a patio. That was unclear until the end.
Okay, so 3,000 square foot footprint for the residence plus 1,900 square feet for garage and patio.
Correct. That's my understanding.
Okay. In your staff report, when you're going through the criteria for approval, you had made a couple of comments on two of the criteria that require the proposed encroachment into the critical area buffer to be the minimum necessary, that you weren't sure that 4,900 feet represented the minimum necessary. Now that you're clear on that proposal, do you have a different response?
So on the application form, it does ask the applicant to address that. It really wasn't thoroughly addressed. I asked again 3 times. And so I did receive that it was a 2-story home was the consideration for the minimum impact. So there weren't other properties. It's just not the normal length of discussion that I would have expected. But in terms of the impervious surface in relation to the number of acres, it's fine. I just couldn't get clarity on the size. 4,900 square feet seemed like a large home. So it's okay, reflecting that.
Okay. I will, of course, discuss that with the applicant as well when we get to his testimony.
Yes.
So I did review, obviously, the critical areas report that was submitted. That report goes through and delineates and identifies the wetlands that are on site. It doesn't discuss the fact that the parcel is on Henderson Inlet, very near the shoreline, actually, of Henderson Inlet, which is a sensitive water body with lots of shellfish beds. Oh. And I wondered, it doesn't discuss whether or not the wetlands are hydraulically connected to the Henderson Inlet.
I had our county biologist review that, and we didn't pick that up.
Just curious. Okay. Okay. I will ask, after I'm done with questions for you, I will talk to environmental health maybe about that concern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, some of these questions are for you and some of these questions are for other county staff. In your staff report, you said something about a 200 square foot sidewalk, and I wasn't sure what was proposed by that development.
That would also need to be addressed to the applicant. I didn't pick that up. I thought that was going to be associated with the patio. Again, I didn't get clarity on that.
All right.
So it's just really proposed consistently as 4,900 square feet of impervious surface impact, and it's shown on the site plan as a square. And I had discussed with my colleagues about this. So if it comes back at the building permit and they change that and have more detail, the critical piece is that the distance from the wetland remains the same and that the total square feet remains the same, but they're allowed to change this. They could show a different square, you know, for all the pieces of the 4,900. So I hadn't seen it like this before. So this was new to me.
Question about, so on that topic, the site plan shows the 105 feet. But there is a 15-foot that is proposed for the residents, but there's also a 15-foot building setback from the buffer edge, correct?
We can show that yeah, on the site plan, when we approve, we can just draw that in. It'll be in it. It'll be within the 105 feet.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
We can so the building setback.
Is that in addition to 105 or
no? It will be within. Is what I'm trying to say. It's not in addition. It will be within.
So the actual buffer edge is then only going to be 90 feet.
It'll have to be. We can also do, I mean, minimum is 4 foot construction setback, so we could reduce it.
Okay. And your department has no concerns or questions about a 90 foot buffer?
No, I mean, it can be done. It has been done.
Does that have, so again, the criteria for reasonable use exception approval required the encroachment into the critical area buffer to be the minimum necessary?
Yes.
So regarding that criterion?
So it wasn't thoroughly addressed by the applicant, and I discussed that in the staff comment, but we don't comment on the size of a proposed house. I mean, if they feel like that's, I couldn't ask him to reduce the size of the house. He needed to show, there should have been more discussion about, is this the minimum necessary? It wasn't there. So I reflected that in my staff comment.
Okay, you don't feel that that reducing the footprint of the development is a reasonable request or suggestion in light of the criteria for RU approval?
Having discussed this with staff, there hasn't been. I did discuss this when staff doesn't usually ask the property owners. We just need to ask them to just demonstrate, is this the minimum encroachment? They may have 6 kids and need a large house. We don't know that. They need to provide the information in response to the criteria. So
okay,
that's all I have.
All right. I just want to note for the record that at attachment I on the online exhibits, it's not attachment I. It's a repeat of the impervious surface worksheet. So after we're done, I understand Miss Katie is out. So I'll just leave her an email and ask her to fix that online and to get me a copy of the notice of application when she's back in the office.
Okay. Is it something that I could send to Polly? What is it that?
Well, yeah, it's just that the document that's attached at attachment I is the wrong document. So the correct document is the notice of application.
Oh,
this okay. is just a housekeeping issue.
Okay.
I haven't seen the notice of application and I'd like to, and it should be.
Yeah. Okay. I will give that to Polly, the NOA.
Great. Let me go to environmental health staff because I have some questions for them about the project. So if I could have staff, please, if you would unmute and introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Dawn Peebles, Senior Environmental Health Specialist with Public Health and Social Services Environmental Health Division, and that's DAWNPEEBLES.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Peebles, in the materials that I was provided, there's not very much discussion about what kind of septic treatment is proposed. Can you provide any clarity on that?
Yes, and I can certainly enter into the record the septic system design that was proposed. Our staff did review the proposed design and had confirmed that it does meet all the requirements of the sanitary code, specifically Article 4. It is a Glendon system, so it is enhanced treatment that is required based on the current proposal and setbacks. You mentioned the property is located within Henderson Inlet. So our department would require a renewable operational certificate for that septic system, not only because the Henderson Marine Recovery Area sensitivity, but also because of the system type being a Glendon system that also requires that operational certificate, otherwise known as OPC. And so the septic system, again, has been reviewed by our department and is on file under project number 2021-102-375. I will provide a copy of that proposal to Ms. Stoker to enter into the record.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to go ahead and identify the septic system design that was reviewed and approved by your department as Exhibit 4.
Great. And because even though our department has reviewed and approved it, it hasn't received official approval. So I think we would just leave it as proposed design at this point.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry if I misspoke about your testimony. From looking at the site plan, that septic system seems very large. Is it just standard size?
It is a standard size. Those Glendon pods, you add a pod per bedroom, so they are larger than what you would typically see for, you know, because it is an above ground system.
Thank you for that information. I have some questions about the well. My understanding is there's a well on the site and that it's subject to a two-party agreement with a neighbor. Do you know which neighbor, Ms. Peebles?
Yes, it is property 8900 Libby Road Northeast, tax parcel 11905230601.
Thank you. I don't know if you are aware, if you had been apprised that there are neighbors who are concerned that there is not adequate water in the area to serve the proposed residents. Don't know if you have any comment on that.
What I can say is, so the well that's on the site was drilled in 1975. At that time, it was submitted for review for a two-party is what they were referred to back then. They're now two single family residential water supplies that are exempt from public permitting requirements. But at the time of building permit, the building department does require what's called a certificate of water availability. And that essentially is showing that, you know, the developed site does have an adequate water supply to serve that home, meeting both quantity and quality requirements.
Okay. So at that point, will the applicant be required to show the well does have water to serve the new residents? Or is it just that he again has to say, look, see, I already have an approved exempt well?
I don't want to speak on behalf of the building department because I do believe it could go either way. There is a well log with the pumping records on file, and that may be sufficient. They may not need additional information, but again, that would be their judgment call at time of building permit.
Thank you for that clarification. There was also some public comments expressing concern about impacts to the wetland as it extends onto adjacent properties. And some of those concerns were about stormwater, some of them were about septic. Again, with the Glendon project or the Glendon treatment facility that's proposed, does your department have any concern that on-site septic would impact the wetlands and therefore impact the adjacent properties?
There are no concerns because the proposal does meet all of our requirements, Article 4 of the Sanitary Code and all required setbacks and treatment level requirements as well.
Thank you very much. Anything else, Ms. Peebles?
Not at this time.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Saint, if I could ask you please to join the meeting, sir, so I can ask you a couple questions.
Certainly.
And introduce yourself, please.
Yes, Arthur Saint with Thurston County Public Works Department.
Thank you very much. Mr. Saint, do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Saint, I have some... Somebody's unmuted. A little bit of, I don't know who I'm hearing because I just want to hear Mr. Saint. Mr. Saint, could you please let us know, there were some concerns about stormwater runoff impacting adjacent properties. My understanding is the driveway is proposed to go directly along the property line.
Yes.
And could you speak to those concerns at all?
Yes, the drainage will be reviewed when it's submitted with the building permit application. So that obviously with the comments, we'll know to look at that much more stringently than normally we may have.
And if your department finds that it meets code or meets required standards, does that, will that assuage your department as to concerns about runoff onto other properties?
Yes, it would.
And then if there turned out in the future there were runoff onto other properties, what would there be any remedy or?
Not that I'm aware of. Typically, some runoff is allowed under the drainage manual. Obviously, the water has to go somewhere. And depending on the soils, it may not be able to infiltrate completely on site. And some manner of runoff may still be allowed. In fact, it may be required. You are actually not allowed to stop runoff completely with a drainage plan, because that can cause adverse environmental impacts as well.
All right.
There will be, it will be looked at and will probably need to have treatment provided for that to make sure pollutants are taken out of that runoff.
All right. Anything else from your department's review of this project, Mr. Saint?
Not at this time.
Thank you for being here, sir. Mm-hmm. Ms. Lou Bentobing, anything else before we hear from the applicant?
Not at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. Just want to...
I'm sorry, Examiner Rice. I did just forward you attachment J, which is the NOA. I sent it to Polly, so that is coming your way.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, then let's time to hear from the applicant. Sir, if we could ask you to unmute yourself and then please state and spell your name and allow me to swear you in.
M. Burdette, B-U-R-D-E-T-T-E.
Thank you very much. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Great. Mr. Burdette, did you want to make a presentation?
Sure. Can you hear me okay? Is my volume fine?
You sound good.
Okay, great. Yes, we are proposing to build a 3,000 square foot, two-story residence on this 7-acre parcel. And I would like to ask that all reference to a 4,900 foot square residence be replaced with 3,000 square foot residents, mainly because it's causing some confusion, especially with the neighbors. They're upset that there's going to be a 5,000 square foot McMansion built next door, which is not true. It's just a modest 3,000 two-story residence for my retired wife and I.
Can I clarify that?
Yes.
Is it 3,000 square foot residence or 3,000 square foot footprint of residence?
Well, see, that's the confusion. As you know, in realty terms, when you say 3,000 or 2,000 square foot residence, you're referring to the living space. In this case, it is 3,000 square feet of living space. But for our discussion, it's more important to reference the footprint because of the boundary setbacks. That's why we're really emphasizing what the footprint or maximum footprint size would be. So what you have in front of you is a site plan, and there's a 70 by 70 foot square in there, and we propose to build a two-story 3,000 square foot home inside that footprint. And that does include the 15 foot buffer for the construction. So we're only asking for the 105 foot setback, and then there's an area of 88 feet for the one of the pods of the septic design. So that's what we're proposing, not a 5,000 square foot.
So residence. Let me just, and again, just to clarify, so if that 4,900 square foot or that 68 by 68 square shown on the site plan, that's going to include a residence that will total 3,000 square feet. But if it's two stories, it won't have 3,000 square feet on the ground.
It'll be more because
No, I'm just looking at the residence, the residential footprint on the ground.
Sure. It'll probably be a little bit more than that because there's an attached garage. When you say a 3,000 foot residence, you don't include the square footage in the attached garage because that's not living space. So the home you live in right now, let's say it's 2,000 square feet, you probably have a 3,000 foot footprint on your home because you have a garage, I assume. And you probably have a patio, you probably have a front porch. So you want to include all that into what your footprint is.
Okay. I still don't feel like I know though. Like I feel like you're not actually answering. The question I'm trying to ask is, I'm trying to understand what the footprint of the residence would be. I'm also interested in the footprint of the garage.
Well,
both issues.
Let's just say the footprint of residence would be 3,000 square feet.
So then it's going to be more than 3,000 square feet if it's two stories.
Yes, when you include the patio and the garage.
I mean the square footage of the second floor.
No, the residence would be 3,000 square feet. The living space of the house would be 3,000 square feet approximately.
So the things that you are saying do not align. It's either going to be 3,000 square foot of living space or it's going to be a 3,000 square foot footprint. It can't be both.
Sure it can. Well, no, it's not both. It's not both. Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. It's definitely not both. So it is a.
Please help me understand what's actually proposed.
It's a 3,000 square foot, two-story residence.
And you are unwilling to clarify.
No, I am willing to clarify.
I don't understand.
All right, well let's work through it then, and let's get it clarified. So when I say I'm going to build a 3,000 square foot residence, that's living space. You know, in realty terms.
I'm not that interested in realty terms because we're just talking about the reasonable use exception. So all I need to know is the square footage of the proposed residential footprint.
Okay. Let's say it is, I don't have a final design.
Sure.
But let's just say I'm looking at several designs. Let's say it's, 3,600 square feet. And that includes the entire footprint of these. That would just be the footprint of the structure. Let's just do that. The footprint of the structure.
So that includes the residence and the garage?
Yes.
Construction.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Period.
So some amount of that is going to be garage.
Yes.
Some amount of that is going to be the footprint of the structure.
Absolutely.
And then there will be some upstairs living space.
Yes.
So if I add what you've just said to the 4,900 square foot square-ish that you previously described, that 49, the extra space in there,
mm-hmm.
outside the 3,600 square feet of the footprint.
Yes.
You said that's going to include the 15-foot building setback?
Yes.
Okay. So will it necessarily be unimpervious or will it be impervious, that 15-foot building setback?
The setback would be pervious.
Okay. Just want to make sure, because it seems like I'm not able to track that closely or understand that well what it is you're saying. So the 4,900 square foot total that you've given includes the building setback, the pervious yes. building setback.
Yes.
All right. That's a typical way of presenting the information, and that's probably why we're having a hard time tracking what you're saying.
And may I add one more thing?
Sure, please.
That 4,900 square foot footprint also includes front porch, back porch, deck, patio, if we do have those things.
Okay. So your maximum.
Yes, maximum.
Maximum like development envelope for the yes. residence and garage.
Yes, that's very well said, envelope.
And that includes the pervious 15-foot building setback.
Yes.
Okay. That's what throws it off, is including that figure in there.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. We got there.
Can you give me a ballpark on how big your garage is going to be?
That's just a two-car garage.
Okay.
That's just the wife and I. We're retired. We don't need a lot of space.
Okay. Thank you for that. I want to hear everything you have to say. So I don't know if you want to go ahead and present other testimony, or should I ask the questions that I have and you could respond to them? How would you like to do that?
Well, I think what we just discussed was the biggest sticking point and confusion for everyone. So I think we've got that clarified, correct?
I think so.
Okay.
Anything else you want to add, or should I just ask the remaining questions?
Yes, ask the remaining questions.
Great. In the staff report, staff quoted your proposal as saying there's a 200-foot sidewalk. Curious what that is, where that goes.
Well, that's within the 4,900 square feet, but that was on the impervious worksheet. What was that? Yes. Yeah. That's on the impervious surface calculations on the impervious surface worksheet.
And can you just clarify what it means? What's the sidewalk?
It's to the front porch from, you know, it's just an impervious surface.
It's a walkway, basically.
It's a walkway, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. I just was confused by the use of that term. Do you have any information for us about the existing access road or driveway?
Yes, there's an existing access road and driveway that goes along the entire north side of the property. About, I think the length is about 975 feet long. It hasn't been well maintained in years and years and years. I put some fresh gravel down and cleaned it up last year, I believe, 200 or 300 feet from the access to the property from Libby Road.
Do you know who created it?
Gosh, it's been there for decades, so no, I don't.
Okay.
Probably been there since the early 70s.
Do you know if it was associated with any previous structures on site?
No structures. I was assuming, since there's a gate at the rear of the property and the gate at the front and two sides are fenced, I assumed at one time it could have been agricultural purposes. I think this lot was connected to the lot due west of it, looking at the county record. So it may have been agriculture back in the 60s or 50s. I'm not sure.
Okay. And is it not very densely forested, pretty much?
Now it is. It's grown up over the decades. It's probably been logged twice, at least once for sure. It's been logged, maybe twice. I'm not sure.
Okay. And your intention is to remove some trees just for your development envelope. Is that correct?
For that, and as for safety reasons, I don't want a 100-foot tree falling on my house or my neighbor's property, or I don't want them falling on the power lines. Every winter, that part of Thurston County gets a lot of power outages because of trees falling down on power lines out there. So, well, yes, my intention is remove trees for safety reasons.
Okay, and I think the there will be a forest practices application.
Yes, right? I have to go through that whole permitting process and probably do mitigation with that as well.
Okay.
As you know, the permitting process will flush out all the details that we've talked about today.
Can you provide us any testimony about the concerns that surrounding property owners have about impacts to area water as a result of development of this property?
Yes, I can. My assessment is with the neighbors, they think there's a 5,000 square foot mansion going in next door. So they're upset about that, and rightly so. I would be too, or at least I'd be concerned. And then of course, this is a huge change for one of these neighbors. They've lived there for decades without having a neighbor to the south of them. And here I come along and I'm making a change to them. And when people have change, you know, they get defensive. It's scary. Everyone is scared of change for a variety of reasons. And they're just protecting their nest, protecting their territory, which is normal, natural. I would do the same. And I have done the same in the past. Go, oh my gosh, there's a change happening next to me. How is that going to negatively impact me? So I empathize with them. I do empathize with them. Hopefully over time I can reduce their anxiety and their concerns when they realize I'm not a threat to them.
Do you have any concerns about water availability for your own residents?
No. I did check the well logs, and the supply meets the demand of a two-party well.
Okay. I didn't ask all my questions about that driveway. Do you intend to pave it?
No, it would be cost prohibitive to do such because it's going to be quite lengthy.
So it will remain gravel?
It will be remaining gravel.
Okay. And then is it going to stay at its existing width, or will you be widening it at all?
No, it's wide enough now. All right. It's at least 10 to 12 feet. That's more than enough for a residential driveway.
Okay. And so you wouldn't need to remove any vegetation for that either, because it's an existing road?
Existing, yes, until we curve off and head, as you can see on the site plan, when we curve off and head towards the house, we will have to deal with the vegetation at that time.
But along the property line, it's already cleared?
Yes.
Great. Question. Your mitigation plan includes 12,882 square feet of plantings. Mm-hmm. To mitigate the impacts of the development on the wetlands, but the majority of the mitigation plantings are proposed between your property and the adjacent property, as opposed to between the residents and the wetlands. Just curious about that.
That's what our biologist came up with, and that's what Thurston County approved as well. We were working with Thurston County on a mitigation plan, and that's how all the parties came to the agreement.
Can you just give me a ballpark estimate on the width of the two stripes of mitigation on either side of your residence, between the residence and the wetlands? How wide that mitigation planting will be?
Let me take a look at the site plan real quick.
Maybe 20 feet?
All right, here we go. Okay, approximately, I'm going to guess approximately 15, 20 feet,
yeah,
something like that.
If the driveway as shown here is 10 or 12 feet wide, then that looks like it's
somewhere in the ballpark there.
Yeah.
Once we do our site plan and we start hiring our designers, landscape architects, engineers, and so forth, then the details will all get fleshed out.
I have a question addressing those criteria for reasonable use exception approval that require you to demonstrate that the proposed development is the minimum necessary to allow use of the property.
Yes.
My question is, looking at your site plan, it looks like if you simply scooted the development envelope closer to the driveway, the existing access drive, you could shrink the overall size of the proposed development envelope. A reason why that didn't happen?
Yeah, we could do that just a little bit more. You're right. Yes, we could do that just a little bit more, a few more feet.
So my I guess another way of asking that question, or more information about that question, is did this septic review indicate that the septic system has to go where it is proposed on the property?
It does, yes. That, as you know, well, maybe you don't know, the soil in this part of Thurston County is mainly clay. And it's a very challenging to find suitable soil for a septic. So this site where the septic's located here is the suitable soil area on that 7-acre parcel. So we are pretty much restricted to that location for the septic. If I move the house further north, which we can a few more feet, well, then we're getting closer to the residents on the north side of the property, and I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable with our house being too close to their house. Like I said, they've lived there 40 some years with no neighbors, and I don't want to just get in their face and make them uncomfortable.
Sure. I have one more question about the 105-foot request.
Yes.
I'm looking at your site plan, and if you look, I guess this is the west, on the west side, you've got from wetland B, a distance of 105 feet, but then there's a great deal of space between the square that represents the development envelope and the edge of that buffer. Why can't the buffer extend closer to the development envelope and be wider than 105 feet in that location?
I think you've lost me.
Sure. So you wetland B, and then there's a 105 feet to the line.
Yes.
So between that line at where it's indicating 105 feet and the residence, that's got to be 30 feet. Looks like the development envelope, the open space, the part of the property that's going to be impacted at all, could be physically scooted to the development envelope and provide a setback of 120 feet or 125 feet instead.
We could, when we put this together, I was trying to err on the conservative side. It's easier to go smaller, as you know, than it is to go larger. So these are maximum conservative figures. When this is all said and done, I know everything will be much, much, much smaller. But if we can get approved for this maximum, then it just makes it that much easier as we move forward with the final design. Okay. But you're right. You're right. You're absolutely correct. There's a few things to play with.
So addressing those criteria, and again, the applicant has the burden of proof. There are two criteria that say this will be the minimum encroachment into the critical area necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you want to say anything else in response to those criteria that have to be shown to be met before an RUE can be approved?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. This would be the minimum encroachment into this area. That's the 105 feet on the west and the 81 on the east. These are the, am I saying that right? The minimum encroachments or maximum encroachments? Yeah, no more. We're not encroaching any further than those numbers. Let's put it that way.
Did you consider placing any mitigation plantings between the septic components and the adjacent wetland edge?
We didn't consider that.
Okay. And in the driveway is going to be graveled up all the way to the house, or will there be a paved portion of the driveway adjacent to the house?
Such as an apron? That's a good question. I've done both in the past. We may have a 3-foot apron in front of the garage, 3-foot concrete apron in front of the garage.
But the rest of it would remain graveled?
Rest of it would be remain gravel.
Okay. I guess I don't have other questions. Is there anything else you'd like to say in response to the questions I've already asked?
I don't think so. I think you covered quite a bit. I don't have any other things.
Okay.
Nothing.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Mr. Burdett, did you have a chance to review the recommended conditions of approval in the staff report?
Yes.
And did you have any questions or concerns about any of those?
Well, the only thing I have concerns about, as I mentioned earlier, was any reference to a 4,900 square foot residence. It's a 3,000 square foot residence.
All right.
As per attachment C references a 3,000 square foot residence.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think at this point, we are ready to go for public comments.
We have our senior planner, Sharon Lumpen-Tobin, in the audience. Her video failed. So if you have
any
to start, she's there.
Ms. Lumpen-Tobin, did you? Well, and she won't be offering public comment, though.
Governor Rice?
Yes.
Sorry, this is Sharon Lumpen-Tobin. My computer crashed, and I don't know what's happening today. When I was trying to get back on, I missed a portion of the testimony when you were asking for clarification on how large is the square foot impervious surface of the house. And I didn't catch that piece. Could I ask that? Hello?
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll just have Mr. Burdett restate about the impervious footprint of the house. Could you go back over your answer on that?
Okay, let's see if I remember what we said. Let's just run the tape back. No. Let's see, what did we say? The house was, 36, the structure alone, 3,600 square feet footprint of the structure alone.
And the total square footage of the residence is?
3,000 square feet.
3,000. Still don't understand.
This is what I went back and forth and I couldn't get clarity on. The footprint of the house is 3,000 square feet or 3,600?
3,600 square feet footprint of the structure of the house.
Including the garage.
Okay, and then the remainder, the remainder is the garage?
No. It's 30, the structure, his testimony is that the garage would, I'm sorry, the structure has a footprint of 3,600 square feet, including the garage. And that the residence is going to total 3,000 square feet and have a second floor. And I'm still not sure how all that adds up. The additional space between 3,600 and 4,900, that's intended to encompass decks, porches,
patio,
the 200 square foot walkway, and he said the 15-foot building setback.
Yep.
Okay. I did not get any of that clarity just by asking. So.
Right.
Thank you.
I'm still not clear on how a 3,600 square foot footprint is a two-story house with any square footage upstairs. I'm not clear on that. Are there members of the audience who'd like to provide public comment or ask questions?
We have a dial-in number. I can allow them to talk to see, check in.
Let's see, is the number 4331 or the other? Okay. If your phone number ends in 4331 and you'd like to provide comment, could you please unmute and introduce yourself for the record?
And you unmute by hitting *6.
Thank you. Let's Ms. Stoker, would you also promote Rick Glathar and see if Mr. Glathar would like to provide testimony in this matter?
Yes.
Hello, Rick Glathar, would you like to provide testimony? If so, please unmute and feel free to share your video.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, I'm just more of a listener. I don't have any negative comment. It is nice that Kim clarified the square footage of his residence and that includes the garage structure. So, and I know between I'm on the
Mr. Glathar, at this point you're testifying. Do you want to be sworn in and provide testimony? Okay,
sure,
great.
That's fine.
Please state your name for the record and spell it and then allow me to swear you in.
Sure. Richard Glatthar, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, last name G-L-A-T-T-H-A-A-R.
Thank you. Sorry I mispronounced your name. I thought I remembered it correctly from the last time you were
hearing. No, that's fine. No problem.
Sir, do you swear your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you and go ahead.
I do. If I'm aware of the wetlands, as I believe I am, I think there's wetland between, and it runs at a kind of a strange angle between Kim's property and ours. I'm to the south of his property. And the only thing I would like to see is the clearing plan. Obviously, there's a lot of trees that have to be kept because they're in that buffer, I'm assuming. But I just, I didn't know if that was a public record or not.
All right. I don't know. And we'll have staff speak to that after we're done with public.
Okay. Comment. Okay. Yeah. But I'm in full support of his project. You know, these properties are large, but the wetlands obviously, you know, create a lot of problems for development. And, it sounds like he has a good plan to get that done.
Great. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you.
And then we'll check one more time. The person who's calling in, 4331, did you want to provide testimony in this matter? If so, please unmute by pressing *6. And it doesn't seem that they do. Ms. Stoker, if you want to go ahead and put them back as an attendee, we will go to Ms. Lumbentobing to see if you have any response. Mr. Glatthar asked about whether or not he'll be able to see the clearing plan. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, when the applicant comes in for the forest land conversion permit, I believe we do notice of application for that. We'll be looking at which trees are significant that need to remain, and there'll be opportunity for public comment, but it's an administrative decision that goes through. It's a staff decision.
So Mr. Glatthar will be able to comment on that?
Yes.
Yes.
There'll be a notice of application for that and a SEPA.
Great. Thank you. Anything else at this time? Ms. Lumbentobing, did you have any other county analysis to offer based on the clarification we got regarding the square footage of the residents, etc.?
I'm still not clear on the square footage of the resident despite asking multiple times. I'm still unclear. These numbers aren't making sense to me. So I don't have clarity on what the impervious surface impact of the house and the garage. It's not provided just by asking multiple times.
So, but any further analysis based on that? Any impact on a department, whether you have-
As long as, sorry, Examiner Rice, sorry, go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you. As long as when the site plan for the building permit is submitted, then the maximum impervious surface will be 4,900 square feet for the garage, the house, the patio, the walkway. As long as that impervious surface square footage is not exceeded and the distance and the approved distance from the wetland does not change, then it's okay. Then it's okay.
All right. And you heard, I asked Mr. Burdett, could that residence not be moved farther north to provide more setback or more buffer area? Could the clearing area not be moved further north east as depicted to provide a greater setback from the buffer? Did you have any response to that testimony?
He did say that it could be.
Based on that,
is that right?
Yes, he did.
I mean, yes, if he could, then it would be further away from the wetland edge. That would be preferable.
Would it be more
to get consistent? A greater setback?
Would it be more consistent with the reasonable use exception criteria if it were set back farther?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
Yes, Examiner Rice.
All right. Anything else, Ms. Lumbentobing?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Burdett. It is your turn for your final say.
Well, I so much apologize for the confusion with this square footage. I just truly apologize for that. It's all on me. It's going back to your last statement, Commissioner, about moving the setback. Yes, we can massage that a few feet for the residents, but the septic won't be able to move. We're still locked in on that 88 feet.
Got it. It's 81 feet on your site plan.
81 feet, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. I suspected as much, which is why I was asking about the other side of the residence. Your cleared area looks like it could be pushed closer to the square that you have shown for the development envelope, and therefore you could provide greater than 105 feet on that size of the house, on that side of the house. And because the criteria require it to be the minimum encroachment possible, that feels like something that should be required. Do you want to respond to that statement I just made?
Well, if it, sure, yes, absolutely. If the county prefers, I can resubmit a revised site plan that, well, I'll be doing that anyway when I apply for the building permit, hiring the architects, and yes, I will do whatever the county asks me to do. Let's put it that way.
All right. And so it's I understand that wetland A to the east, you're limited to the 81 feet because of the where the septic needs to go. But as to wetland B, it looks like there's possibility of providing a greater setback from that buffer, from that wetland edge.
Yes, a few feet, yes.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Mr. Burdett?
No, I'm just here to answer questions and whatever you want.
Okay, great. Well, then we will go ahead and close the record for testimony today. I believe the only document that has been offered that I have not yet seen is the one that's coming from Ms. Peebles, which is the septic system design. That has been admitted as Exhibit 4, and Ms. Peebles can forward that to Ms. Stoker, and she will get it to me, and we will get it put online as soon as possible. That can just be within the next few business days. That'll be fine. As I said at the top, the record will be held open for two business days to allow for post-hearing written public comment from members of the public who had technology problems. That means the record is open through April 27th. If we get no post-hearing written public comment from people who had technology problems, then the record will close on April 27th and the decision is due May 11th. If we do receive post-hearing written public comment, it will be forwarded to Mr. Burdett and to Ms. Lumban-Tobing for their responses. They will be requested to respond. They also have two business days. That means their responses are due May 1 and the decision is due to be issued May 15. So as soon as I am done with this morning's hearing calendar, after the next hearing, I will email that schedule to Ms. Stoker and ask that it be forwarded to Mr. Burdett so that he has it for his information and also that it be posted online. Thanks very much, everybody, for your participation in this matter. This hearing is concluded.
Very good. Thank you very much, everyone.